So that, but I thought I'd maybe just say a couple of other things in addition. Joe, many of you know Joe Henderson. He's currently the acting chief of staff for the CDC, where he's responsible for the day-to-day management of the office of the director, providing strategic oversight and dealing with issues of collaboration. He previously was a senior program officer at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Seattle. And I'm going, you know, back in terms of the leaving and coming back. Before that, he was the CDC senior management official in New York State, where he provided strategic oversight of CDC's annual investment of $630 million across 233 grant programs in New York State. Joe also served as the Associate Director of Terrorism Preparedness and Response and Director of the Office of Terrorism Preparedness and Emergency Response at CDC. He spent over 9 years in the United States Air Force supporting preventive medicine and medical response programs. He retains an academic appointment at the Harvard University School of Public Health and has a master's degree from the University of Oklahoma and a bachelor's in science from Wilmington College. And please join me in welcoming Joe Henderson.
And slightly neurotic.
Only slightly.
So good morning. It's good to see so many of my immunization friends and colleagues. And I'm supposed to bring the bus home, and I can't roam around to speak. So I'm going to be confined to this podium. So we're not really sure how this is going to go. So let's hope for the best. So in 15 minutes, you can't get a postgraduate education on leadership. You can't get a graduate education, an undergraduate education. Basically, what you're going to get is a community college certificate coupled with some type of first aid CPR course. Here's what you're all interested in, let's be honest. I have 11 slides. And for my friend Mike Flynn, this is not about immunization registries. So I want to talk a little bit about our complex system of immunization, and really I think encompasses the complexities associated with public health and public health programs. And I come before you this morning as what I refer to as a knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing practitioner. So I'm going to try to make this simple. This is, for me, a relatively simple diagram that looks at the work we do on a day-to-day basis. In the center, it's all about our core missions, the things we do every day that occupy about 90% of our professional energy. If we do that well, we'll have a good day and we'll generally see some success. But our challenges are much more complex now. And it's time to really focus on other system components that we tend not to think about when we think about the whole system that's in place to help us solve complex problems. So on the left, you'll see the brownish spheres. Those are what I refer to as accelerants. These are the things that you do, if you do well, accelerate your ability to achieve your mission, realize your vision. The one area that I'm going to focus on this morning is the leadership piece. But clearly, you need other things that accelerate your program activities, information technology, partnerships, governance, financing, et cetera. On the other side, the yellow circles represent the impact and results that you desire to achieve. And this is somewhat of a circular pattern. There is a circular system to this, to where one constantly feeds the other. And what we tend to do in public health as leaders is we'll pull one or two pieces out. We'll focus on those two pieces. We put those pieces back in, and we just assume the other pieces will automatically regulate. And then we're frustrated and can't understand why we're not having the type of success that we'd like to have. So as I walk through the rest of these seven slides, if you're counting, you're going to hopefully keep this in the backdrop as we think about the challenges that we face in immunization in this country and to some extent globally. So let me frame the problem. A few things that I've perceived, and I'm sure you have your own list, but there's a few here that I think will resonate. One is this notion of building and sustaining immunization and public health infrastructure at a time when resources are shrinking and our burdens to do well are increasing, expectations continue to rise. Recruiting and retaining a competent workforce is always a challenge in public health, probably now more than ever. unless we do something active about this as leaders, it's just going to continue to grow as a significant problem that's going to challenge our ability to solve complex problems. Managing high immunization coverage rates when the incidence of vaccine-preventable disease is low is tricky. It does cost something to have a public health program where there's zero prevalence of the issue. The same is true for TB, STDs, et cetera. Parents, and I have friends that have young children, they're much more familiar now with the adverse reactions to vaccines than they are to the diseases themselves, and this presents a particular challenge for us in immunization. And then assuring that immunization efforts are included in the health reform discussion, I think Sarah did a nice job framing this morning, but it's going to be incumbent upon all the leaders in immunization to keep this issue on the table so it's not lost in the larger discussion associated with health reform. So I want to just talk a little bit about what were our challenges then, and then we're going to talk about some of our challenges now. So the last time I spoke at an immunization conference, let me just give you a sense of what our challenges were. And it's been a while since I've spoken at a national immunization conference. At the time, VFC was just getting off the ground. Haemophilus influenza B was sort of the new cool vaccine that we were pushing out pretty hard, and we were seeing some pretty phenomenal impacts of that vaccine. Immunization registries held great promise, and I worked with Alan Hinman and folks on pushing the immunization registry envelope, and I think we had really great expectations that just over the horizon, we were going to see a substantial number of records included in registries, and it was going to be clearly informing decisions associated with the health care of our children. Lance Rodewald had a beard. A number of my colleagues had more hair and a bit of a thinner waistline, including myself. But, you know, when I first spoke at the National Immunization Conference, we were still seeing disease in the population. Many of us remembered chickenpox and things that we saw. It was a routine thing that we're aware of, and things are quite different now. Now we have to deal with the fact that we're successful, and with success, there's also some additional challenge. You can see what I have on the slide here, some of the challenges that we currently face. Many of these articles are relatively new, and actually when I did a Google search last night, which is what I tend to do a lot to acquire my knowledge these days, there's an awful lot of literature circulating about immunizations and the fact that fewer parents are bringing their children in for immunization. There's challenges to state laws associated with mandating immunizations for school entry. We have a lot of challenges ahead of us. And I didn't really mention the budget challenges, but they are significant, and I think many of you know more of this than I do. So, just turning the corner on this, how can leaders transform themselves and their organizations to address these challenges? And so I offer this highly sophisticated graphic that I tend to create when I'm sitting at the airports for long delays. I've done things with PowerPoint. I don't think Bill Gates knows PowerPoint can do. But let me give you a sense of what I'm trying to portray here. All of us as leaders have one primary job. Our primary job is to use the energy that your team puts on the table and your own energy in the most efficient and effective way to solve complex problems. So it requires energy to be a successful leader. So this graphic depicts a person walking up a down escalator. You can do it. By the way, don't try this at Hartsfield Airport, you'll be arrested. But if you're walking up a down escalator, it requires energy just to stay in the center of the escalator. Every day, a leader's faced with challenges and problems that push them down. For example, we look at leaders in crisis, and when a leader's faced with an unprecedented set of circumstances and they become fearful, what happens is we say they go to the basement. They follow their instincts, they tend to have a very narrow view of things, and they can't solve complex problems, and they certainly can't channel the energy of the staff around them in the most effective and efficient way. So what are some of the things that put pressures on you as the leader as you're trying to walk up this escalator? One is this failure to lead up. And if you ever do a Google search on this, you'll find there's not a lot of information associated with how do you lead up effectively. But if you don't lead up, then you are generally going to receive a whole variety of circumstances that may push you down. One is the issue of fluctuating priorities. Fluctuating priorities for a team over time is devastating as far as energy. It suppresses energy. The trust challenge becomes a problem. So leading up is a critical component of leading and maintaining the right place on this escalator. Failure to channel and maintain the energy of the team. Right now at CDC, we have the great, I'll say pleasure, but it's clearly a privilege to be working in an organization where it seems as though everyone has put their energy back on the table. So they're willing to take on huge, complex challenges, they're willing to collaborate, they're willing to take chances. It's not all the time that leaders have this great privilege to look at that energy and find the best way to channel that energy to solve complex problems. But if you fail to do it over time, people will instinctively suppress their own energy, they'll package it up, they'll put it in the cabinet, and they won't pull it out for you. And so as a leader, you have to make sure that you don't burn people out, but that you can use their energy as efficiently, as effectively as possible. The failure of connectivity, not sharing goal achievement with partners. This is the new, somewhat of a new thought process relative to leadership. It's what Lenny Marcus calls the notion of actively connecting with groups that you wouldn't know you share goals with them, working with them, combining the total resources of different organizations to solve complex problems. And everything we're doing today is about connectivity. Every presentation you've heard today is about connectivity and the importance of connectivity as we move forward to solve more and more complex and unprecedented challenges. The lack of awareness of the situation, the team not solving the same set of problems tends to be a problem that will push a leader down. This is where you have different meetings with different staff. You walk out of the meeting, you think that everybody's on the same page, but then staff talk about the fact that we're not on the same page. So teams not solving the same set of problems means you're not channeling their energy. They're going to be energized to do something in a very narrow sense, but they're not going to collectively help you solve the bigger, more complex challenges. The fifth pressure that I identified here is the poor emotional intelligence, where you can't manage yourself or help those around you or around them. This is the issue of checking self-disruptive behavior. You know, the emotionally intelligent leader finds the best way to manage themselves and their emotion and those around them so that they're using their energy, again, effectively and efficiently. So these are the downward pressures for leaders. So the upward pressures, these are the things that help the leader maintain their place on the escalator or even go higher, where they're allowed then to really look at complex problems with a greater team of individuals, more energy is available to solve the problems, and they can see more of the data that they need to make the most informed decisions. So here, staff emulating leader behavior when the energy of the group is utilized well clearly is something that's evident when we see upward pressure for the leader. The leader articulates a clear and consistent set of priorities. This notion of balancing your personal life with your professional life is extremely important. Can't go into this in great detail, but I'll tell you that the BlackBerry is a really bad, it's a bad habit, but it's great technology. But no one, by the way, has anyone here ever taken a class on how to use a BlackBerry? Yeah, well, we need a few, I think, because we tend to never turn it off. I'm a victim of this myself, and so we work 24/7 now. But there's a lot of social behavioral challenges associated with the use of the BlackBerry that I don't think we've quite understood yet, but something we need to think about. But balancing your personal and professional life is extremely important, and leaders need to really practice what they preach in that respect. I'm adhering to protocols and patterns of experience first, then innovating and solving problems. We have leaders that walk around saying, you know, think outside the box. Think outside the box. What we like to think is that in that box are all the patterns of experience that you have as a human being, all the experiences in life, all the experiences you've had in solving complex problems. You need to go to the box first. Now, if you go to that box and there's not a tool for the particular problem, then take your team outside the box. But if you start outside the box, you're trying to be innovative when you actually have patterns of experience either in your own box or the boxes of the staff around you that could and probably do solve the problem. So go to the box first and then think about innovating once you've been there. And then the last bullet here is not that profound. Confidence builds, comes from success in solving problems, both for the person and the team. And I think all of us know, we've been with a team that solved complex problems and we're confident, that's the team you want to continue to work with. And actually my experience with a lot of immunization folks, in particular in New York State, that was a good team to work with. I can tell you, we felt confident. We solved complex problems in the 90s associated with the measles outbreaks, the Vaccines for Children program, even getting immunization registries to become something that was said routinely in public health circles, and I'm very proud of that experience. So let me put this in sort of immunization lingo. This is probably now a graphic you're seeing at about 10:30 at night, so I got to look at this quickly so I don't surprise myself. So here's something we're thinking about in the development of our curriculum at the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative at Harvard. We actually are talking about this notion of creating leader immunity. And I'm not just using this out in this conference, we're actually talking about this. And the idea is, how do you expose leaders to those experiences in an active way so that over time they become more durable to deal with unprecedented events and greater and more complex challenges? It does come from forcing them to be experienced by looking at exposure to certain events. Now, right now in public health, we tend to be highly dependent upon leaders that are sitting high in an altitude of an organizational chart. But if tomorrow they're faced with some unprecedented issue, a surprise, et cetera, it is somewhat, we're hoping for the best that they can do well. So we really need to think about, how do we create active immunity so we have leaders who, in fact, are immune to deal with these new and complex challenges? And so one is through experience, exposure. You know, we have to let people fail. We tend to work sometimes in systems where there is zero tolerance for failure, and frankly, we have to allow people to fail so they can learn from those. The passive way of acquiring this immunity for the individual is through testing, exercising, training, demonstrating proficiency. We do this in the emergency response field all the time. The DOD does this all the time. They don't send commanders into the field in Iraq and Afghanistan unless these commanders have demonstrated proficiency in leading people. So how do we move from the person to the system? We have to think about this notion of herd immunity, which I know many of you understand that. Actively teaching and mentoring and providing experiential learning opportunities for folks, even putting folks in a situation where they're exposed to a challenging event, giving them a big project and allowing them to try things, to own some of the consequences, even of bad decisions, so that they can learn from those. But we do have to build and value training systems, test and evaluating both yourselves and your team. It's something we need to do if we're ever going to have a herd that is, in fact, immune and can lead effectively, taking on great challenges. So, my final slide. I was going to say, just remember, it's about the kids, but it's about kids, adolescents, adults. It's about everybody now, right? But I love this slide, and so just a few things I'll just say here to wrap this up. Our challenge is much more complex now than it is in 10 years. I know I'm speaking to the choir on this one, but when I was thinking back on some of the things we were faced with in the 90s, and I'm thinking about today and understanding the context of health reform, with these challenges comes huge opportunities for us, but there are significant challenges. Think about the escalator. Think about where you are in that escalator. It's important to understand the notion of energy dedication, both yours and the folks around you, if you are going to take on great challenges. Don't burn folks out, but make sure that you're managing that energy effectively. And it is still about the herd. So all of us together can create herd immunity. Thank you.